And we are continuing to close in on number 200. This is installment number 191 of The Parish of the Patriots. Whatever's brought you here, I'm glad you're here. Whether you're a first-time listener or a return member, the regular member of the congregation, glad you found us here. It's great to have you here. As always, hope to have a great discussion. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment that's roughly around the halfway point of the show. Encourage you to stick around for that, whether a Christian believer or not. I do regularly hear from non-believers, and they say they listen to it, and it's like, I still get something out of it. I still enjoy it. So that right there should be your clue that it's just not like your average going to church preaching or something on a Sunday. It's something special. I like to think so. I like to believe we have something really special going on here at the Parish of the Patriots. And again, I'm glad you're here to join us for that. And this is, there's no hidden content. There's nothing behind any paywalls. We just pass the offering plate around just like you would expect, you know. And as I always say, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It really means a lot and helps a lot. Every little bit helps. I'm not expecting you to drain your bank account. Just show a little love. It is appreciated, and it's easy to do. If you go down to the description page here on Radio Albion, you'll see we got snail mail. Honestly, it doesn't get any easier than that. Snail mail. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got email address there. You can drop your notes. If you got a different cryptocurrency, don't be shy. Drop me a note for that. I can more than likely get you an address for that, and I'm not proud. I'll take your whatever shit coins. I'll take them, you know. Beggars can't be choosers. Beggars can't be choosers. I will take your Tezos or yes, I will take your whatever coins there. So yeah, with that having been said, let's take a quick stroll through the listener supporter mailbag. It's not going to take long this week. Support received from Jackie. No note there, but I did want to let you know I got it. And as always, I really, really do appreciate Mr. T with GPD, something for the plate. Thank you, Mr. T. Every little bit in the plate helps. Like I say, I do appreciate it. So if you do get something out of the show, throw something in the plate. Send something this way. It helps. It helps a lot. Well, that was it. See, I don't harp a long time on these things. Wish the listener supporter mailbag took a little longer, but this week it does not. So yeah, things continue to rock along here in Crown World. I was thinking about what I had jotted down because I tend to think about things, of course, a lot. Every day. And when something pops into my head and I start thinking about it, I jot it down. I think, well, we can discuss that in the show. The show's completely unscripted. That's why I ramble. You know, I don't have a script written out for the show. That's why I don't hardly ever do, you know, well, of course, on this show, I don't do it at all. The Albion Insight Show, I've done those from time to time, and I'll have somebody on and sit down and do a discussion with somebody. And you know, it's always difficult for people who haven't done it before. See, Sven and Dr. Johnson, see, they know. They already know what to expect. Because generally, people say first time, people sit down and they're like, so what are the show notes? And they're like, they ain't no show notes. What do you want to discuss? Anything. Yeah, and it throws people off. They don't know what to think about that. There are no show notes. It's not scripted. That's why I tend to ramble. And sometimes the show just comes out random as hell, and everybody's like, what is he doing? And sometimes, though, it does wind up coherent. Most of the time, I want to think that it winds up coherent at the end. You know, at the end, you're like, well, it did kind of all make sense. But I do, that is not say I don't jot things down. And something crosses my mind, and you know, through the week, I'll jot it down. So this is something worth discussing further and thinking about together with all of y'all here on the show. I was thinking about, of course, the Great Reset. We're seeing this. The big part of the Great Reset, you know, because it's not just a meme. And we see it kind of being made light of, you know, the Great Reset. You know, you will eat the bugs. And you have, like, normies now have picked this up. But, like, they've picked it up like it's some kind of joke. And, you know, the same people that sit there and act like it's a meme, it's a joke, you know, the Great Reset, you'll eat the bugs, you know, and then they'll sit around and turn around and be like, I don't understand. Why are they destroying our economies? You do understand that this isn't a joke to the people that are enacting this. Great Reset. Yeah. And of course, one of the centerpieces of the Great Reset is what? Deindustrialization. And I think it's important to understand that deindustrialization, what does that even mean? Well, we're seeing it taking place, for instance, but not, it's been taking place here in the U.S., and now we see it taking place as well in Europe. And, you know, Western Europe, our quote unquote allies, are getting hit really hard with deindustrialization right now. And you know, deindustrialization on its own wouldn't necessarily be bad. There's something to think about. Deindustrialization on its own wouldn't be bad. But you see, they're not talking about deurbanization. See, it's deindustrialization. If it was deindustrializing while at the same time deurbanizing, getting people out of the cities, getting people back in touch with nature, getting people back to small family farms and more of an agrarian lifestyle, not just everything focused on, you know, technology and industrialization and the current, you know, way things have been currently run, it wouldn't necessarily be all bad. But you see, they're talking about deindustrialization and hyper-urbanization. They're going to get the last few remnants of people that aren't in the cities, because the only way you're going to be able to survive is to live in your government-appointed pod and eat your bug paste. And again, it amazes me that you got people have taken it up, you know, and they're like, yeah, the Great Reset, you know, Klaus Schwab, he wants you to eat the bugs. But it's not a joke. You can't then turn around and go, why are they destroying our own economies? Well, because they're deindustrial. What do you think deindustrializing you means? They haven't shoved the bugs down your throat yet, but that is coming. Deindustrialization, again, that's going to be accompanied with forcing the last holdouts into the cities. They're going to offer you your little government allowance to live off of and your little pod. You won't have to worry about paying rent. You'll have your pod provided for you. You can eat your bug paste, masturbate to your government-provided porn. just be an NPC. Just be complete brainless NPC. It's going to be great. I don't have to worry about a thing. It's crazy, but we're seeing that playing out. And again, it's funny that people don't make that connection. Hey, well, why are they doing what they said? Because this is what they said they were going to do. Like I said, it wouldn't be bad if it was a deindustrialization that was deurbanization. Again, getting people back on the farms, getting people back in touch with nature, getting people back connected with nature and the real world around them. But of course, that's not what they're talking about. Talking about people like Klaus Schwab and George Soros. It's like their part of their role is to be at the first, you know, at the front. I guess I want to say the face of these things, you know, but part of their job is to be at the front, to be the face of these things, to be applied to them. You talk about the Great Reset, you know, and people say, well, if you ask general person, you know, well, what do you think of the Great Reset? Who's responsible for that? And they'd say, well, Klaus Schwab. Well, no, there's a whole bunch of people that are responsible for that agenda, that promote that agenda, that are enacting that agenda. He's just the front and center face, like George Soros. Like I said, if George Soros had been actually, if we were to find out that George Soros had been dead like for 5 years now, I mean, would we know? I mean, do you actually see this guy? He's just the face of it. He's just the character of it. He could be long dead and it wouldn't matter. They could just put a computer generated image of George Soros up there, you know, still shot of his picture, and say George Soros is doing, but it wouldn't actually be George Soros. In other words, if George Soros died today, nothing's going to change. It's not like all of the agenda that gets attributed to George Soros is suddenly going to stop. He's not single-handedly like responsible for this. It is a group effort. Same with Klaus Schwab. This is a group effort. He's just the face of it. People get like, well, why doesn't somebody, you know, I've read things where people say, why doesn't somebody do something about George Soros that could fix all of this? No, nothing would change. Like I said, George Soros could have been dead like 5 years ago. We wouldn't know. They just say, oh, well, this group is funded by George Soros. Have you seen the books? I haven't seen the books. How do we know it's funded by George Soros? Because they're telling us it is. The media that never lies to us is telling us it's funded by George Soros. And again, we believe it. It's funded by George Soros. Have you seen the books? If it wasn't funded by George Soros, would all these NGOs that promote this stuff, would they go away? No. Nothing would change. He's the face of it. They have to put a face on it. Because if they don't put a face on it, people are going to be, well, who's responsible for it? Who are these groups of people? What is this group of people? Who's promoting this? We want to know. They got to put a face to it. George Soros' job, Klaus Schwab's job, is to go out there and be the face. I'll be the face of it. That's a role to be played. It's an important role to be played in all this, but it is just a role. It's silly to think that they're just like a single person is responsible for all of this. It's childish and simplistic to think that. They're playing out their role. Also, you know, to be the face of it. So you know I have someone to blame. Gosh, talking about George Soros, one of the things that, you know, I haven't been on social media in some time now. And it's just like a breath of fresh air. You know, we do these stories, and like on the Daily Nationalist, when I go on Fridays with Fan, and we do these stories about Twitter and these controversies involved in social media. And I have to say, you know, not being on social media is just like a breath of fresh air. I've said this before and I'll say it again. If Elon Musk buys Twitter and says, everybody can come on, we're doing a fresh start with Twitter. Everybody can come on. These will be the rules. You can come on and set you up a Twitter account, be on Twitter. I would still pass. Because it's just for any number of reasons. I can sit here and just go on. But it's just, I don't need that. I don't need that stress in my life. I don't need that headache of the social media. That turns into running around trying to get a people's approval. That's what that little upvote thing is. You get caught in the trap of running around trying to get more people to approve of what you say, or to applaud what you say, to quote unquote like what you say, and to get lots of upvotes. How many likes did you get on that post? You got to post something to get lots of likes. No thanks. I'll pass. But back when I was on, there was a point here. Back when I was on social media, you know, people, normicons in particular, would go on about George Soros. You know, one of the most just drive me crazy is they would put up some picture of like some random German. Some random German guy, you know, from the Gestapo or something, and be like, this is a picture of George Soros. You know, in, I remember, whatever year, you know, it's like, this is George Soros. He was a Nazi. He was 12. He was 12 at that time. You got a picture of like some 30-year-old German soldier here. You know? Some 30-year-old SS officer on here. This is George. No, it's not. And I remember I go back and forth with these people. And I remember one of them one time when I kept pointing out that he was 12 at that time. There's no way this is him. And they basically wound up going, well, it doesn't matter because he still was a Nazi. It's crazy, you know, because everybody, if it's an evil entity in this world, it doesn't matter who it comes from. You know, they've got to be the Nazis. Everybody that is really bad is Hitler. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which side. Like, you look at the Ukraine thing, and it's whatever side. You know, Zelensky is the real Hitler, or Putin is the real Hitler. But if you're going to be the ultimate, it's got to be Hitler. Anybody that brings in common sense is Chamberlain. You're just appeasing the Nazis, whether the Nazis happen to be the Russians this time or the Western-backed Ukraine junta. You're Chamberlain. You know, that's got me thinking, I need to study Chamberlain a little more. I'm thinking maybe the guy's gotten a really bad rap. Because everybody that speaks any kind of common sense, you're just appeasing Hitler. We know how well that worked out. Yeah, people have this simplistic way of thinking, though. Everything has to be World War II all over again. And whoever is the assigned bad guy has to be Hitler. And, you know, if you disagree with that narrative, then you're Chamberlain. There we go. Problems. Case closed. Problem solved. Don't have to think any further. At the end of the day, nobody knows who the bad guys are. But whoever they are, they're damn sure Nazis. Just have to accept it. And this gets under the skin. This gets under the skin of people, you know, that have actually like studied World War II and actually understand like the real political implications of what was happening and the motivations behind, you know, what Germany was doing and so on and so forth. And gets under their skin, you know, gets under their skin. It's like, you know. But look, you just get, that's how it is. You know, that's how it is. Whoever the bad guy is going to be called the Nazis. They're not real Nazis. They just don't even bother. You're wasting your breath. It's the narrative. It's the narrative. And it's just, it's been set. It does amaze me. I mean, people have to think of things in a simplistic term, you know, and Americans in particular, because I can't talk for people in the rest of the world, but I do read and it appears to be more or less the same mindset. But Americans in particular, they just, I don't know. I guess it's from watching too many TV shows their whole lives, you know, and movies and crap like that. You have to understand, Americans have got to have this, there is no gray area. They are good guys and they are bad guys. And it doesn't matter how complicated a geopolitical question is or a conflict is. They can't get into details. Just tell them who's the good guys and who's the Nazis. I mean, that's what they got to have. Who's the bad guy? Who's Hitler this time? Who's playing the role of Hitler? And who's the good guys? They can't understand. Why their eyes just glaze over. You get in, it's like, well, you know, what China is trying to do right here is, you know, they're trying to further, you know, their trade expansion by a policy of, you know, their eyes just glaze over. They can't understand that. Just tell them who Hitler is. Is Z Hitler? I mean, who's Hitler? Who's the bad guys? Because when you understand that, you understand why people do what they do in this country. They have to have a good guy. They have to have a bad guy. If you're not able to tell them that clearly, then you're wasting your breath. Being on social media back in the day, you're wasting your breath. They got to know who's the bad guy, who's the good guy. When you get into discussing the details, you know, well, this side is not a Hollywood bad guy. You see, the reason they're doing what they're doing is because of A, B, C, D. What does that mean? He's the good guy. You're saying he's the good guy. Well, no, I'm not saying he's the good guy. I'm just saying this is why they're doing what they're doing. And this other side over here, this is why they're doing. And their motivations are all not, you know, holy, pure, and true. They're pursuing their own agenda, whatever you may think of that personally. You have two sides in a conflict, like on the geopolitical front, and they're both pushing an agenda. But Americans can't grasp that. They just want to know who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, who's, you know, who to cheer for, which sports team is the one, which side do I cheer for, who's my team, you know, what jersey do I put on. Anything beyond that is beyond them. When we see this played out, it's not just in geopolitics. We see this played out. We saw it played out in, say, with the old coronavirus thing, you know, with the masks. You know, the mask wearers, they were convinced they were the good guys and you were Hitler trying to exterminate them because you wanted to breathe yourself and not put the mask on. Why don't you just wear the damn mask? I hope all of you die. Remember seeing those posts? I hope all of you that refuse to wear the masks, I hope you die when you get sick. I hope they refuse to treat you and I hope you die. Because, see, if you didn't wear the mask, you were the bad guy. That's what made you the official designated bad guy. That was a great thing about the mask. You see, if you had the mask on, they knew you were probably a good guy. But if you walked around with no mask on, you see, you didn't care. You didn't care about health and you didn't care about the safety and you weren't doing what you were told for the betterment of the community. And see, they knew you were Hitler wouldn't have wore the mask, you see. Since Hitler wouldn't have wore the mask and you're not wearing the mask, that means you're like Hitler. It's very simple. Simple. Everything boils down like this. And that's what makes people so easy to manipulate. You know, if you got a group of people that, for instance, were independent thinkers, and just hypothetically here speaking, but if you have a group of people that are independent thinkers, they're going to be very hard to manipulate. You know, you're going to hand them you're going to give them your line of bullshit to go along with, and they're going to be like, well, now, wait a minute. wait a minute here. Where's the proof of that? Let me see the data on that. Let me study that a little longer. What are those who disagree with you? What do they say? What are their points? And let me look at the evidence they're presenting and I'll decide for myself. They're a difficult group of people to deal with. These independent, these critical thinkers. These will not be emotionally manipulated. But if you got a group of people, and all you got to do is point to them and say, that's the bad guy. And this is what the good guy is doing. That's easy. That's easy because whatever agenda you're pushing, whoever doesn't agree with that agenda, they're the bad guy. When you have a sports team mentality people, all you got to do is tell them that's the other team. They're wearing the red jerseys. They're not blue jerseys. It's easy, easily manipulated. Easy to get them to go along with whatever. All you got to do is give them, well, you're the good guy. Because they want to be the good guy. They won't be told they're the bad guy. That gives them a negative emotional reaction. They won't be told they're the bad guy. They won't be told they're the good guy. And see, since you're the good guy, that means those other people, you know, you're the good guy. You're doing what you're told by your superiors, by your government. You're going along with whatever the media tells you. See, you're good. You're a good person. Very good. But those who aren't doing that, look at them over there. That's just amazing to me. Yeah, these people would go along about, you know, oh, you know, we got to get more people banned for hate speech. Very same people would be going on social media and be going on about we need to ban everybody for hate speech. We need stricter rules. We're not banning fast enough. We're not banning enough. We need to ban for the hate speech. Because, you know, that's what bad people do. That's what the bad guys do. They do the hate speech. And then you would have, like I said before, you would have these very same people talking about, I hope all of you refuse to wear the mask. I hope all of you die. I hope you go in the hospital and you die. Like their version of porn with these propaganda clips they would put out of somebody going like, I'm fixing to die of COVID. I wish I'd have worn a mask and taken the vaccine. Oh, and they were just like porn. They were like masturbating to that. Like, see, that's what happens. That's what happens to bad guys like you. People that sit around and pose themselves as morally superior to everybody else because they want people banned for quote unquote hate speech, which comes down to disagreeing with the approved government narrative. They then would turn around and say, I hope those that disagree with me die. And there's no, it never registers. It never registers the contradiction there in their minds. Well, you're saying you're a good person because you oppose people saying mean things on the internet. Yes, we just can't allow that. People could have their safety threatened. Safety, yes, safety. Well, how is someone disagreeing with you on the internet threaten your safety? Well, it could cause people to have a negative emotional reaction. They might go hang themselves or something because someone disagreed with them. Someone they don't even know disagrees with them on the internet. We got to protect people's safety. What do you think about people that aren't taking the vaccine, didn't wear the mask? I think they should just die. I hope they die. And it never registers contradiction. Why? Because those are the bad guys. They're the bad guys. We're the good guys. It doesn't matter what contradictions are present. You know, that's why you see this. You see this represented, you know, a couple years ago. All the cops were evil, racist, going around hunting black people for sport. All the cops needed to be abolished. Abolish the police. Abolish this law enforcement. They're all evil. They're all racist. They serve no purpose except to going around and oppressing the communities of color. And now this very same people are going around support law enforcement, support the FBI, that are going around raiding people's homes for their religious beliefs. Same people. There's no contradiction in their mind because all they got to know is who's the bad guys here. You see, a couple years ago, the cops were the bad guys. See, but now when it's the cops persecuting the bad guys, they're for that, you see, because the new bad guy is the new Hitler are pro-life protesters, you know, people expressing their religious beliefs and protesting at an abortion clinic. They're the new bad guys. And if the cops are attacking those bad guys, then the cops are the good guys now. It's just got to be presented as a good guy, bad guy. They'll go along with anything. And it doesn't matter if it's contradicting the narrative from a year ago. People have been trained for these shifting narratives. It could change every day. I don't think it matters. Of course, I guess one thing that makes it simple is if you're white, because all of this has a common denominator of the anti-white race hate agenda. If you're white, trust me, you are the bad guy. you if you're not the bad guy now, you will be the bad guy. At some point in time, you're going to be the bad guy. It always comes back around. It always comes back around to that. You know, they might say, well, yeah, but you're in the subcategory. You're okay. We're going to tolerate you for now. You're in the LGBT community. You're okay. You may be white, but don't worry. You're going to be the bad guy. You're useful right now, but they're going to get a wreck. Your day of being the bad guy. It's going to come around if you're white. You can trust, you can just put your money on that. It is amazing how easy it is, though, to get people to go along, as long as you present it that way. And that's what most people in this country will go along with. The worst things is happen. You know, we talk about urbanization, and I do. I think urbanization is like the most unhealthy way for people to live. Specifically, I think it's unhealthy for any people, to be honest. But I think it's specifically unhealthy for white people. I do. I think it's the most unnatural state for us. You know, it's not the way we're meant to live. We're supposed to be spread out. We're supposed to be closer to nature. We're supposed to know the names of those in our community and those who are around us. We're not supposed to live stacked on top of one another in a stupid apartment building in downtown metropolis. It's an unhealthy way. It's an unhealthy way for us to live. You know, it is. And one of the bad things that is really awful things as a company to this is this media culture. You know, I imagine back in the day when, you know, movies and then TV came out and people thought it was this great thing. You know, but you look at where we're at today and all of this is possible because of movies and TV. It's just numbed everybody's ability to think at all. I mean, it's not like, you know, every average person, you know, is some potential great philosopher or something, but they'd at least question and say, well, that doesn't make any sense. But movies and TV, the media that is developed side by side with urbanization, because see, if people are closer and connected to nature, if they're not in the city, if they're not urbanized and they're closer to nature, they're going to be closer to going, well, that doesn't make sense, because they have a more of a connection with the natural order. If you're out here living among, you know, trees and lakes and things such as that, you know, you see animals on a regular basis. You know, when somebody hits you with something that's just BS, you're more than likely to say, well, that doesn't line up with the world I look around me, because you're closer connected to the natural order. The natural order isn't present living in a concrete tower in the middle of some sprawling city somewhere. You're so far removed from nature that you'll believe anything because you don't have any connection to the natural order. The media, alongside with urbanization, is part of what's made people like this. All of these chemicals in our food and things such as that, it all works together. Now people have this dumbed down, simplistic mentality. But none of that, if you took any of those factors out, if you took the urbanization out of the equation, or if you took the media and you know, all forms of the media, not just the news, but movies and TV, everything people sees on TV, and now social media. If you took all of those, any piece of that out of the equation, it would be much more difficult. All of it works together. All of it comes together. This urbanization, this media, and all of this hyper-socialization that they've got people to come under. And it just, they boil down to they can't process it any longer. They're disconnected from nature. They're disconnected from their past. They're disconnected from their family. And they'll believe it. They just they're at the point, it's just tell me who the good guys are. I don't even want to hear all the other, just tell me who's the good guys, who's Hitler this time. That's all I need to know, so I know whether what I'm supposed to be doing. I know which flag to post up on, you know, to put up on my Twitter profile. What flag are we putting up right now? That's all they need to know. It's right, you know, it's like I used to be in a place like so many others, you know, talking about quote unquote waking people up. You know, for me personally, I'm not criticizing people that are still promoting that idea. But for me personally, I've long given up on that. I have. I've long given up. People say, you know, yeah, we got to just wake everybody up. I'm long beyond that. I'm way too jaded. Don't even be coming up on me talking about waking people up. I'm way too jaded for waking people up. That's a waste of time, in my opinion. I'm talking about for me personally. I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not criticizing. I'm talking about me personally. I've long given up on the idea of waking people up. Why? Because the situation necessary for putting them to sleep is still present. No matter what you do, you hit them with all this. Imagine if you were literally trying to wake a person up and they're laying there in a bed and they're asleep, okay? And they're hooked to an IV that has a constant drip of, I don't know, fentanyl or whatever. You know, it's got a constant drip of a drug that's keeping them asleep. And you can be grabbing them and shaking them and screaming in their face and shaking them and telling them to wake up all you want to. Ain't going to wake up because they're still getting the drug. People are still urbanized. They're still hyper-socialized. They're still inundated with narrative media. All they can process now. They're so numb. All they can process at this point is who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. That's it. And again, I'm just talking about me personally. I'm not sitting here saying anybody else that says they're waking people up is wasting their time. I'm talking about for me personally. I don't view it. I view it as a waste of time because they're still hooked to the IV. You still have all of this media. You still have all this narrative. You still have all of this inundation. You know, they're still hooked to the IV. You can shake them and scream into the abyss all you want to. They can't hear you because they're still being drugged. It's pointless. Well, I mean, it's not pointless, but I mean, the idea that you're going to, you know, somehow wake them up, you know, if you could cut all of the media off, drag these people out of their apartments and have them live in a small house on a, I don't know, 10-acre farm that they got to go out there and try to raise, you know, something to eat on, you know, then yeah, you know, they would probably wake up. They'd be like, wait a minute, what? But of course, it's not possible to do that. But again, it's not to say it's pointless. You might be sitting there saying, well, then why are you? Why do you continue? Well, because the truth still matters. And I get to that point right before we're going to get into the Christian specific segment. You know, the truth matters. Speaking the truth matters. This world is all temporary. Speaking the truth in this world matters, regardless of what. In other words, regardless of what. Because if you just judge the success of what you're doing, let me put this a different way. If I simply judge the success of what I'm doing on how many people came around and agreed with me, I'd have been black-pilled and gone long ago. You see, the point of what you do as a Christian believer is what you're building towards in the eternal life. In the life to come. And again, I'm not preaching early. We haven't moved into the Christian specific segment. But the truth, the point is that the truth matters. It matters in this world whether people accept it, agree with it, or not. When you, and again, I'm not preaching early, but when Jesus would go around when he was walking the earth, you know, he was like, he would show up and he would tell these people the truth and then he would leave. And they either accepted or not. He didn't stay around the ones that disagreed. He didn't stand around and beg them to agree with him and to understand and to wake up. He just gave it to them. There's the truth. You can accept it or not and moved on to the next town. Sometimes the crowds would come up around him and be like, this is the greatest thing we've ever heard. And then it's like almost intentionally he would come out and tell them something that they didn't want to hear. And they would, same people would all leave. But the truth matters. That's why I continue doing what I do, because the truth matters in and of itself. It matters beyond even this world, but the truth matters. And if you stand and speak with the truth. And some people do get it. I mean, you're listening to this show and you've discovered, you know, truthful, i.e. alternative points of view. You know, and some people do manage to peel themselves away from that. But understand, if you're listening to this show, you listen to the content of Radio Albion, and you find yourself being a truth seeker, you understand you need to accept this. Otherwise, you're going to get frustrated. So hear what I'm going to say. Understand, you're a tiny minority. Okay, you're a tiny minority. It's not to say there's anything wrong with you, but you're a tiny minority. I mean, you're special. Okay, you got peeled away from the BS. You know, you found something to like and enjoy out of the truth, and not, you know, just going along with the herd. But understand, that's not most people. Most people are quite comfortable going along with the herd, even if the herd is going into the slaughterhouse. They don't care. You know, you're not going to convince them that you're going into the slaughterhouse. You need to leave the herd and get over here with us. They're not going to do that. They're going to be nice and cozy in the herd. That's just the way they are now. But some of you have managed to peel away from that. And that matters. That matters. It may be a small number out of all of these people, but it still matters. It still matters. So, you know, we continue doing what we're doing. That I don't have any dream that, you know, we're going to wake up tomorrow and like, you know, I don't know, 10 million people are listening to the Parish of the Patriots. 10 million people are listening to the Parish of the Patriots and they've all woken up. And yeah, I don't have any illusions of that. Most people are not. They're not, because they're still hooked to the sedative. They're still reading all of the narratives and going along with it. And they're only able to go along with who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. That's as far as their understanding goes. We need to get into the Christian specific segment and get into the sermon this week. So again, if you're new here, I encourage you to stick around. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. You know, it's like I say, a lot of people, I've heard from people who say that they don't necessarily consider themselves Christian believers. They still enjoy the segment of the show, so you might want to check it out. Anyway, with that having been said, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And for this week's Christian-specific segment, we're going to read a few verses. We're going to kick off reading a few verses from the book of Revelation. We don't do Revelation that often here, and it's sad that as Christian believers, we really kind of, I don't know, Revelation is kind of an all or nothing book of the Bible. You know, I mean, we might read through the Gospels, you know, dozens of times over our lifetime. Yet the book of Revelation, you either seem to go all in or not. I find it a shame that too often, because we get hung up. Every time we start getting into Revelation, it seems like people get hung up trying to apply it in a literal sense. And what I mean by that is, you know, oh, see, this represents, you know, this specific person in this day and time. I'm old enough. I kid you not, I'm old enough. I remember being like young, you know, being a young person and people talking about the book of Revelation. And they're like, you know, you see, this represents the Soviet Union. See, God is this represents the Soviet Union. And I don't know, this could be Gorbachev. Well, of course, it seems silly now. You know, in hindsight, and that's a trap when you get hung up on trying to say, well, this is this person. You know, I mean, yes, it's possible, but what if it's this person that's going to appear on the world stage next year, but you've already hung this title over here? It's a mistake. You want to I think the importance of the book of Revelation is to understand the pattern so that you understand what's going on in the world around you. It's not so much getting hung up on saying this person is this figure represented in the book of Revelation. If you understand the pattern and understand that these patterns have happened multiple times before, these patterns have gone around and around. Some of what John was writing could be applied to the world he was living in at that time. So let's go ahead and jump in. We're going to do chapter 6. We're going to do verses 9 through 11. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet a little season, until their fellow servants also, and their brethren that should be killed as they were, should be fulfilled. You know, this is just a few verses, and there's so much to unpack. You know, that's it. That's all the Bible reading we do. We don't do a lot here, because you can do just a few verses. There's a lot to unpack from just this little bit here. One of the first things that jumps out at me, and you run into a lot of times with unbelievers, is they will say, well, if your God is all powerful, if your God actually even created the universe, then why is he letting y'all, you know, you read the history of how the apostles were slain for the sake of the word. Well, why did he let that happen? Why did he just let his people get killed? Why isn't your all-powerful God doing something about his servants, about his children being slain? You read this here. Well, you can't be avenged yet. I'm not bringing about the judge. You know, the judgment will not be brought about yet until the rest of your number has been fulfilled, that also had to be slain and persecuted for the word, for the testimony. This seems strange to the unbeliever, and even perhaps to, sadly, Christian believers themselves. The thing is, you understand that the things in this world are indeed literally temporary, or you don't. And it's easy to say it, But when that you find out how much you believe it as the persecution comes around, as the trouble comes around and knocks on your door. You know, it's either temporary and you move past it. Because see, after you die from this world, then everything that happened in this world, aside from that which happened to mature you spiritually or to help others mature spiritually, all the rest of it is meaningless. None of these voices crying out from under the altar were saying, "Oh, Lord, I did not finish that project at work, and it really needed to get done." It's meaningless. I mean, it's like the old saying, nobody lays on their deathbed and says, "I should have spent more time at the office." It's meaningless. It's temporary. And it's sad. It's sad because people sometimes get caught up, so caught up in these things, and they lack the perspective to understand that it's temporary and meaningless and becomes all-consuming. And they think it's going to be like this, you know, my entire life, especially young people, sadly. Teenagers get caught up in something bad they're going through, and they think this will be my whole life. And some of them, sadly, in their lives, they kill themselves because they don't see a way out. They don't understand that it's meaningless. It's temporary. 5 years ago, you were probably really stressed out and worried and upset about something, but you couldn't tell me now what it was. At the time, it was a huge deal. Now, I say, what were you stressed out about 5 years ago today? And you're like, I don't know. Because it wound up, it wasn't anything. And yet time and time again, we get hung up and we think it is. The point here is that as Christian believers, we really, at some point in time, the rubber meets the road. And we have to understand that the things that happen here are temporary. When we die from this world, that is our rebirth. That is when we actually birth into the eternal realm. So the question is asked, what's the point then? Why is it that the Lord is waiting around till their number is fulfilled? Why does not stop this now? What's the holdup? You see, and this comes to his judgment. It's not even so much all about those who are slain for the sake of the truth, for the sake of his word, for the sake of the testimony, being added to the number of those crying out from under the altar. But it's about those who are going to send them there. It's about those who are going to kill them. It's about none of those escaping God's judgment, escaping his justice. You have a wicked evildoer, and he's done all of these wicked and evil things. One thing he hasn't done is kill a servant of the Lord. But he's going to. He's not going to escape that judgment. He's going to fulfill that so that the full wrath of the Lord will cast him into hell. He won't escape that which he was going to do, if that makes sense to you. In other words, it's not so much about you even. It's about the fact that this person has got to reach their full wrath of the judgment. God is just. I'm always so amazed. I'm always so amazed when I hear a self-proclaimed Christian person that will say something like, well, you know, a loving God, you know, I don't believe in hell. And it's like, well, what do you mean? You don't believe in hell? How can you believe in anything in the Bible if you don't believe in hell? Well, I don't believe in hell because God is love. God is love, and God is, and a loving God would never make a hell. They wouldn't be a hell. You'll hear this from unbelievers too. You know, well, if you're God, you say your God is so loving, then why does he have a hell? Why does he create it? Why is there such a thing as hell? You can't have, how do I want to put this? I have a hard time almost explaining this when people come up with this because it's so silly. You cannot have love without justice. God, yes, God is love. God is love. And you don't understand what that means. You know, because people are hung up on this emotionalism. God is love. God is just. How could God be a loving God absent of justice? If you think of the Lord as the Father and his children have been slain. Imagine, you know, your child being slain. And then you go to the eternal realm and the wicked and evildoers, well, they get a pass too. They get to go to heaven too because God is love. How would your child, how would you as a child feel about that? Would you feel that your father really loved you? You went through all of this persecution and your persecutor and those who participated in killing you. You get to the kingdom of God and it's like, you've done well. Here's your war. You were in the kingdom of heaven. And you look over here and here's those people that did that to you. No repentance, no nothing. They're just there too, because after all, wouldn't be loving for them to go to hell. Would you feel that your father, in this sense, loved you? No, you would be angry. You'd be enraged. I would. I would be totally pissed off. Why? Because it's not just. You'd be like, wait. You mean I had to be tortured and I had to be killed, and at the end of the day, I get the same thing that the people that did that to me get? Well, yes, because love. That is not love, because there's no justice there. That is unjust in every sense of the term. So love cannot exist where there is not justice. Oh, I really hope that makes sense, because it's so simple and it's so like plain. It should be so plain right in front of you. Of course, this silly notion, this shallow notion, when people come up with things such as this, you know, where there can't be a hell because God is love. So it goes back to this creation, this modern creation of this caricature they've created of Jesus as, you know, this pacifist hippie Jesus, you know, that just sits around, smokes dope, talks about love and peace, man, love and peace. They've created this caricature of who Jesus is, because they know him not. They've created a false Christ that they go chasing after. It's all about love. There can't be a hell because he's about love. But again, there cannot be any love unless there's justice. God loves his children. He doesn't love the children of the devil. I mean, when you go back to Jesus and the parable of the weeds, the tares sown amongst the wheat. I mean, what happens to the weeds? Well, they're bundled up and thrown in the fire. They don't get thrown in there with the wheat because they're all the same. He loves his children, but the children of the devil, no, they're reserved for being thrown into the fire. That's the way they work, because his love is accompanied with justice, because it's an actual true love. Another interesting thing about this, and this goes back to understanding that once we leave this world, they can't do anything to us. Jesus said, don't fear those that at the end of the day, the worst thing they can do to you, they can kill you. At the end of the day, they can kill you. Don't fear those who can only kill you, and after that can do nothing more. Fear him who, after you die, can cast you into hell. But again, there is no hell. Really, Jesus says right here, he's talking about hell. An interesting thing here is that these souls are what? They are under the altar of the Lord. And he breaks the seal and he sees the souls of those who have been persecuted, even to the point of losing their lives for the sake of the testimony of the Lord, for the sake of the Lord, they have held true. And now they are under the altar. I think that is so significant that he sees them represented as being under the altar. You know, I think of, you know, under the altar would be like under the throne of God. So in other words, this represents that after you have left this world, after you have faced the persecutions of this world, you know, when you join those, if you join those that are under the altar, under the throne of God, understand that you cannot be touched. We've all faced in our lives, and will continue to face, you know, a certain amount of, you know, problems, stress. You know, it's impossible to be 100% perfectly at peace, because there's always something eating at us, right? You know, and of course, it varies. Sometimes that's worse than at other times. But imagine, you know, going through, you know, just these horrible persecutions, but then finding yourself in a place where you're 100% completely safe. Imagine, if you would, being in a place now, all of a sudden finding yourself in a place with whatever's troubling you in your life to where nothing can touch you. Nobody can say anything about you. Nobody can persecute you. Nobody can touch you. Nobody can demand anything from you. Nobody can, you don't have to worry about what anybody's thinking about you or saying about you or pointing the finger at you or accusing you of or any of that. You are in a bubble. You are 100% protected. In other words, they're under the altar. They're under the throne of God. Nobody can get to them now. This represents that they are now in a place where nobody can touch them. To get to them, you would have to remove God from his throne to get to them, and that's not happening. They have absolutely reached a place of 100% protection. They have finished the race. They have completed. They have crossed the finish line, and now they're in a place where nobody can touch them. There is no more trial. There is no more persecution. There is no more accusation. There is no more bringing false charges and no more hassling them and lying about them. They cannot be touched. They are under the altar. They are under the throne of God. They are in a place of absolute and complete and utter safety and protection. Again, the non-believer can't accept this because they're like, well, it does them a lot of good. They're dead now. But they're not. They're not. They went through the temporary race and now have eternal life. The dead ones are their persecutors who, after they killed them, were like, there, we got rid of that guy. We won't have to worry about him. Let's move on to the next one that we want to persecute. They are the ones who are truly dead. All these things tie in. He who would save his life will lose it. You see, they think they're continuing their self. See, we killed all these people that oppose us, that talking about the Lord and his truth, that won't bow down to the lies. We've persecuted them and silenced them, and we've killed them if that's what it takes. But you see, it's still all temporary. You know, they drag it out. You watch these evil and wicked people and they're like 90 something years old. You know, they're taking like, I don't know, infant blood transfusions and illegal organ transplants to stay alive because they're clinging to life. They're trying to stay from that judgment. It's coming anyway. You can't escape it. And hell is the ultimate death. Hell is the ultimate death because there's no coming back from it. We all face death in this life, but you see, in hell, there is no ending. There is no, well, this will be over when I die. The suffering in hell goes on. But see, they're under the altar. They are under God's ultimate protection. They are ultimately safe. No one can touch them. These are the saints. These are the saints that have been slain and faced persecution. For the sake of the name of the Lord, for the testimony. Now, it's also interesting as we look in verse 10, what are they doing? Are they crying out to God, Lord, don't exact judgment on them. Forgive them, Lord. This reflects how people don't understand, you know, the things taught about, for instance, turn the other cheek and such, or the Good Samaritan. They don't understand. The voices of the saints are crying out in verse 10 for what? For God to not bring about his justice? No, they're crying out, Lord, how long? Lord, holy and true, how long dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? How much longer, Lord? How much longer? To you avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth. And white robes were given unto them. And in other words, they're purified. And it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, because they're safe. You can rest. You know, you can't rest when you got things weighing down on you, when you got problems, when you got trouble. You know, you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Rest. Here's a white robe. You can rest now for a while. They should rest for a little season until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. Wait until everybody's here. That way, when God exacts his judgment, he doesn't miss anybody. You see, the ones that are coming after you, they still have to join your number. They're going to get a white robe. They're going to get rest too. They've been birthed into the eternity and have found themselves in the kingdom of God because his word is true. God doesn't want to miss anybody on the judgment side of these things. He's going to get all of them. He's going to get all of the number. All the number has to be gathered up. People get hung up, you know, all the number of God's children have got to be gathered up to the kingdom of God. I've heard people say that. People say, why isn't the, you know, why doesn't God just go ahead and wrap this up and bring everybody up to the, you know, to the kingdom of heaven? Well, and the response to that, somebody say, well, you know, this goes on because, you know, these people have to have a chance to repent. As if, you know, the world's worst evildoers are going to do that. But somebody will say, well, God's, you know, why do these evil people, why are they living so long? See, God's giving them a long time on this earth, so they'll have more chance to repent. The thing drags on so that God doesn't miss anybody when it comes time to send them to hell. Nobody's going to slip under the radar. You know, well, God wrapped that up just soon enough. This guy was fixing to even do worse. Can be counted among the numbers. You know, they're going to the full judgment. This comes back as a reflection of the free will that we have. What are you going to do with your free will? We're gifted free will in this life. There's two characters that represented in what is seen in the vision. One is unseen. They're off camera, as it would. They are off stage. But you have this set of characters, which are the people of God, which are the saints that have been slain for the sake of the name. The second set of characters, which we don't see here, are those that are on the earth. In other words, those that are responsible for this, the evil, the wickedness. How long until you avenge our blood? But they are the second set of characters we see represented here. But they're just simply off stage. But their number has to be fulfilled. You have the number of the saints that has to be fulfilled, but also as an equilibrium to that, the number of those destined for hell, that has to be fulfilled as well. There will be none that escape his justice. That number has got to be fulfilled, and it has to all stay in balance. We are given free will. We have been given free will to decide for ourselves. People want to be, they don't want any responsibility. People will say, well, if there's really a God, then why has he let these evil things happen? Because we have free will. There'd be no point to this exercise if we were just NPCs doing our programming, carrying out the things, you know, just we have free will. So you have one set of people who wind up under the altar, the saints, and they used their free will to carry out the will of the Lord, to stand with the truth to the very end, to show that they truly believed, even to the point of facing death. But then, as I say, you've got these other characters which are off stage that we don't literally see in the vision, but they are those who have used their free will. They have exercised their free will, what? To their own evil means, to further the agenda of the devil, even to the point of slaying the saints, even to the point of not just persecution, but also killing the saints. But they have used their free will for that. They have chosen that. What's coming isn't undeserved. They used their free will and chose that path. So out of our two sets of characters here, one uses their free will to hold to the truth, to hold to the love of the Lord, and the other uses their free will to evil and to wickedness. I say it's amazing because we can sit here and as I said at the beginning of this, you know, it's a shame that we don't get more out of the book of Revelation, because we do. We get so often hung up on trying to, you know, apply a literal thing, like we're reading tea leaves, like we're trying to read some sort of fortune telling here so we know what's going to happen tomorrow. And like I say, it's a shame because there's lessons to be learned here. There's lessons to be learned in what's represented here, what is written here. Like I say, we've just gone through a few verses here, and we've touched on, I think, a lot of points. And so there's much more in here we could go in. I was almost thinking, instead of talking about this today, going through, you know, the very beginning about, and we may do that at some point, you know, about what's represented by what he's telling the seven churches, you know, the problems he has with them and warnings that are given and such, as, and we could apply that here. But I went with this instead because I just find it, again, interesting. We can just cover a couple verses and really unpack a lot of things that mean stuff, you know, that means something for us right now in how we're living our lives and how we view ourselves as believers in this world. You know, like I said, it's easy to say, but, you know, those represented under the altar have followed it through even unto death. You know, it's just having that perspective and reinforcing that perspective, whether or not you're going to have to hold to that all the way to the point of death, holding that perspective as much as you can in your heart brings you closer to the Lord and to his righteousness and to his true love and understanding his justice. We're going to wrap up on that note. Again, I hope you got something out of it. It's always the goal here. Thank you for joining us for the show. Don't forget, I'm come on Fridays for the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. Thank you again for those of you who put a little something in the plate. Means a lot, helps a lot. It is a blessing for me. So I really, really do appreciate it. And as always, hope to see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.